Many of us read the Bible and attend church because we expect something uplifting, to be able to go home feeling better than when we came. And yet in today's first reading, we hear Job lamenting about his life, and we're not very uplifted. He says at the very beginning, "Is not man's life on earth a drudgery?" And then he ends by saying, "I shall not see happiness again." Thank you, Job. What's wrong with this picture? Where's the hope? Perhaps I thought, when I read this the first time, I thought, well, maybe Job's speaking on behalf of somebody else, you know, or telling of how somebody else feels. And so I went reading the chapters around this chapter in Job, and no, sure enough, these are Job's words, and this is how Job really felt towards God. And yet, God was so proud of Job, if you read the book of Job. And I think the first thing that he teaches us is that it's okay to feel like God has it out for you. That is not, in fact, the case, but it's okay to feel that way. I think sometimes it begins with the feeling. We feel like God has smitten us because we feel the burdens too heavy. Whether it's the sufferings in your life or just the trials or the things that God has allowed to be thrown at you. And then that moves from the heart into the mind, and we begin to think, gosh, what does God have against me? Or what did I do? And then it moves from the mind back into the heart of faith. And this is where we have to make a decision. Did God, in fact, have it out for me? Or maybe is there another purpose? You see, we live in a world where feelings are put first and they're never checked with logic, and this can be a great challenge for us as human beings. God made our feelings to line up with our minds. God made our feelings to line up with our minds. But then something happened called the fall. And then our minds don't always line up with our feelings. And we tend to want to give our feelings priority instead of our mind's priority and our faith priority. Part of maturing in the Christian life is beginning to assert your mind and your faith above your feelings, in contrast to the world around us. The story of Job also teaches us that God will and does test us. In fact, we pray in the Our Father today, later on in Mass, "Lead us not into temptation." I was on vacation a couple weeks ago with a friend from Maryland, and he was telling me about how his brother-in-law, who's really struggling in his Christian faith, he had called him and said how disturbed he was by the Our Father. And when he began telling me this story, I thought, well, who's disturbed by the Our Father, right? I mean, that's like the one prayer all Christians can pray together and have no problem with. But he was particularly disturbed by this line, "Lead us not into temptation." We're talking to God the Father. Why would God the Father lead you into temptation? There's this beautiful scene at the beginning of the book of Job where God is in heaven and Satan approaches his throne. And God says, it's funny because God kind of initiates the conversation and says, "Have you seen my servant Job?" Because he's so proud of him. And implied in those words is, have you seen how good Job is, how faithful Job is? And Satan responds by saying, well, yeah, of course he is. He's never been tempted. He's never had anything bad happen to him. Of course he's faithful. And so God says back to Satan, well, I bet you that even if you tempt him, even if you take away all those good things, he'll still remain faithful to me. And what the first thing that came to mind when I'm picturing this scene in heaven is, you know, at the end of the original Karate Kid film, Daniel-san is in this tournament, and he's made it miraculously through this whole tournament, and he comes up against the final match against his arch nemesis, Johnny. Real creative name there, right? And Johnny makes an illegal move on him and hurts Daniel, but Mr. Miyagi does this thing where he slaps his hand together and rubs them really fast, and then he grabs his thigh, and miraculously he can walk on it again. And Daniel goes out there, and he's getting ready to do what's called the crane maneuver on Johnny. And I remember this scene because Daniel looks to the side at Mr. Miyagi, this little short Asian guy, right? And he's looking for kind of a sign of approval or reassurance. Can I really do this? And Mr. Miyagi just nods his head one time. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't smile. He keeps a straight face. He just nods his head one time. Kind of like, you got this. That's how God felt about Job. That's how God feels about you when he allows you to be tempted. He wouldn't allow you to be tempted if he knew you would be overcome. There's a great saint who said that God did not say that he would not allow us to be tempted. He only said that he would not allow us to be overcome. When God allows you to be tempted, he allows you to be tested, and he wants you to grow in greater grace. St. Ambrose says that the devil tempts so that he may ruin. God tempts so that he may crown. St. Ignatius says, if God causes you to suffer much, it's a sign that he has great designs for you and that he certainly intends to make you a saint. We need not be scared of temptation or suffering in this life. It is truly a blessing. Lastly, Job teaches us, and the story of Job teaches us, that suffering sometimes only makes sense in the big picture, and that we don't get to see the big picture right now. You know, it's not until the last chapter of the whole story of Job that all that suffering makes sense. Because God sees his faithfulness, and because Job has been faithful through all this suffering and all this trial, having everything taken away from him, the last chapter of the book is where God bestows blessings many times over back on Job. And what if you started reading Job and you got about halfway through and you're like, man, this story stinks. This poor guy, he's just getting it from God. And you put the book away. How many of us are tempted to do the same thing with our own lives? We get through halfway through a temptation, or we get halfway through a trial, and we decide, you know, this just isn't worth it. And we give up. And we never wait till the end of the story. Blessed Henry Suso says that suffering is a short pain and a long joy. And again, we live in a world and in a society where we want everything now, don't we? I really noticed this about myself around Christmas time. You know, I'm a last minute shopper, and thank goodness for Amazon, where you really can have things now. But you go to the mall or you go to a store and you're in line at checkout and there's like five people in front of you and they don't know what they're doing. Or you go to a restaurant like, say, McDonald's, and there's somebody actually in front of you trying to decide what to eat. As if the numbers at McDonald's had changed, as if the menu at McDonald's had changed in the last 25 years. I mean, number one, still a Big Mac. When you go into McDonald's, you should know what you want. And here I am in line thinking, come on, come on. That impatience that creeps up. Why? Because we want everything now. I think a lot of times this affects our Christian understanding of suffering and temptation. We want it to be over now. And we're not looking at the big picture. And the graces that come if we have that grace of long suffering. St. Teresa of Avila said that suffering is a great favor. Remember that everything soon comes to end. And take courage. Think of how our gain is eternal. The loss is temporary, but the gain is eternal. There's I think a certain number of Christians out there, and even sadly some churches, that think that if you become a follower of Jesus Christ, a disciple of Jesus Christ, you won't suffer as much. And it's funny because that's not biblical at all. In fact, Jesus says, if you become my follower, you will be persecuted. And if you want to be my follower, you have to take up your cross and follow me, right? What our Christianity does, it doesn't change the fact that we suffer. It changes how we suffer and why we suffer. And Jesus shows us that on the cross. This is a man who didn't have to suffer. Not one single bit. Not one iota of sin on his soul. And yet he chose to suffer for you and I. And that's one of the questions that I ask a lot of our elderly when I see them in the hospital, or particularly see them suffering, or ask myself as well. I ask them, who have you offered your suffering for today? And they kind of give you a strange look, like, what do you mean, Father? Well, if we're to be like Jesus Christ, then when we suffer, when we go through something bad, shouldn't we offer it for the sake of something? Make it fruitful? Because if all we do is just try to bear through it, try to get through it, even prayerfully get through it, it's wasted suffering. You can actually offer that suffering. First for your own sin, your own soul, but also for others. Others who need conversion, who don't even know Jesus Christ. What makes suffering and hardship different for us as disciples of Christ is the purpose and the promise. The purpose is to test and prepare us, and to bring others to heaven. And the purpose is the promise of eternal life. About a month ago, I was listening to the radio and flipping through stations, and there's a Christian radio station in town who has what's called a 30-day challenge, where they ask you to listen to only Christian radio for 30 days and then kind of see how you feel. And I thought, well, I can do this. I had a little slip up on Friday. I listened to a little Vanilla Ice in the car, I'm ashamed to say. It was sunny. Windows down, you know, takes you back to your childhood. But otherwise, I've been doing this, and one song that really has impacted me as I've been listening more to Christian radio is this song by Jeremy Camp, and I posted it on our website for you to listen to and to look at the lyrics. I'd really encourage you to go and do that sometime today as part of your day with the Lord. But I want to share with you the beginning of that song because it really reflects our Christian view of suffering and hardship. He says this: all the bitter, weary ways, endless striving day by day, you barely have the strength to pray in the valley low. How hard your fight has been, how deep the pain within. Wounds that no one else has seen, hurts too much to show. All the doubt you're standing in between, and all the weight that brings you to your knees. He knows every hurt and every sting. He has walked the suffering. He knows. Let your burden come undone. Lift your eyes up to the one who knows. He knows.